Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line in Los Angeles, is the Meek Mill to my Drake, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
Good. And yes, I try to think of a witty comeback.
Charged up. Have you been following the Meek Mill Drake?
I'm aware that
war of words.
There are accusations from Meek Mill that Drake does not write his own lyrics. Something along those lines.
Yeah, and I'm here to say that I write my own lyrics, as in I write my own chart listicles, I guess, on Billboard.com.
Yeah, all of the words credited to our names are really the things that we write here on the 101st. Billboard Pop Shop Podcast Spectacular.
And the first Pop Shop podcast to be launching on a Tuesday. Before we get into it, Keith, thanks again to everyone who listened to the 100th episode featuring 5 Seconds of Summer.
You can still listen to it. It's still there. It will be there
forever. Nick Jonas, Austin Mahone. Unbelievable. Keith, I don't even know if I told you this. We've kind of been following the... how well the 100th episode has done casually, but I actually looked like at the hard numbers, and it was by far our most streamed, downloaded, visited, whatever you want to call it, podcast ever. So thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to that hour-long spectacular. As Keith said, you still can get it on iTunes and on Billboard.com. It was pretty cool, Keith. We got a lot of nice words, and I'm still pumped. I'm still fired up. I'm still charged up, as Drake might say.
Well, we're not sleeping. It's like we still have a jam-packed, fabulous show this week, as we do every week.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're basically, since we haven't really talked about the charts in 2 weeks, we're going to get into it. We're going to be talking a lot about the Hot 100 and the Billboard 200 chart. There's a new number one there, and a couple pop odds and ends. And also, we have a special guest on this week's Pop Shop podcast. Years and Years stopped by. I love this band. I love their debut album, Communion. It came out a couple weeks ago. They stopped by the Pop Shop podcast for a really engrossing chat, and can't wait to get to that later in the show. Before we get started, as always, if you want to subscribe to the Pop Shop podcast, follow us on Twitter and on iTunes. That way you never ever miss an episode. If you have a question for us on Twitter, hit us up. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. Give us a rating or review on iTunes. We always do appreciate that. And if you want to subscribe to more Billboard podcasts, go to iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. That's plural. Keith, are you ready to rock and roll?
Yes.
All right. There's that enthusiasm.
Wait,
yeah.
What do you want from me? It's like, oh, yeah, baby. We're totally ready. Ah! I mean, is that what you want? Is that what you're kind of hoping for?
I would like that. Yeah, I want like a wrestling intro, basically.
Are you ready? The audio editors for this are like, going to be so upset. I apologize.
I just picture you like... I'm like, Keith, are you ready to talk about the charts? And you're like a wrestler, like tearing off your shirt. Like, yeah! So yeah, let's do it, man. All right, so Hot 100, Omi Cheerleader, the song I told you all was going to be number one months ago, is number one again for the third week. The Weeknd, Can't Feel My Face, closing in at number two. Keith, how close is it between number one and number two?
Actually, the gap increased this week, believe it or not.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, Omi has actually widened his lead. Though the song barely has a gain this week, The Weeknd actually lost a little bit of traction. I think, though, that could change a little bit, because I think the official music video for Can't Feel My Face arrived today, I believe, Tuesday. So that could make a big impact next week, perhaps even moving it to number one, but we shall see. But right now, though, The Weeknd is still held at bay at number two for a second week behind Omi's Cheerleader.
Yeah, it's funny because Keith, this is a fun segment.
Is this really
fun
funny?
Unofficial
or is this,
segment.
Is this actually funny? Or
this no? is pretty funny. Okay. This is a fun unofficial segment we like to do on the Billboard.com Pop Shop podcast called Jason Drives Around Listening to the Radio Sometime.
Oh, it's
and
that
has
again.
Reactions.
It's that thing again where you're driving, you're trapped in a car, and you're like, hey, I've turned on the local top 40 station here in Vermont.
I'm not in Vermont.
No, I'm close sorry. Enough. Okay, go ahead. I apologize. But,
no, it's okay. I just wanted to let you know that I was driving around a lot, and the songs that I heard the most, I will say I had a pretty good sample size. I was in the car about 5 hours yesterday. And almost exclusively listening to either Top 40 music or the Ray Schremmerd album, which I also bought yesterday. So, I mean, I'm driving around a lot, and I'm listening to Top 40, and it's interesting. I'm hearing Omi's Cheerleader a ton, but I'm also hearing so much Can't Feel My Face that it was just like, I know it's number two, but I feel like it feels like it's just destined for that number one spot. I don't know what it is. It just seemed like it can work in any kind of radio block. I just got that feeling that this is the song that is going to be inescapable next. So I guess we'll see. And like you said, the music video is coming. The Beauty Behind the Madness Weekend album is coming. So a lot more Weekend in the coming weeks on the chart, I'm sure.
That's right. Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
It's like I'm the Kool-Aid man.
Oh, boy. That'd be cool. The Pop Shop podcast co-hosted by the Kool-Aid man just barging in all the time.
Like, what if the entire podcast was done in these voices? Jason, what's up next?
Well, Keith, what up next is My Way from Fetty Wap, which flies from 87 to 7.
Oh yeah!
On the Hot 100.
How that happened? Now, this we actually can't sustain this because I think we would probably
lose listeners. It hurts my throat. Keith, so you pointed this out. It's a huge gain. It rises 80 spots, and it's funny because this is after Fetty Wap just got his second top 20 hit after Trap Queen, of course, was the number two hit, and now he has a third top 20 hit, his second top 10 hit with My Way. And what happened here, Keith?
Yeah, so Fetty Wap, of course, has already hit number two with Trap Queen, and then, as you said, reached the top 20 with 679, and then this track, My Way, featuring Monty, jumps 87 to 7 because it was finally commercially released, in download services. Finally, it went up for sale. So it had been kind of lingering at the bottom of the chart, and finally it was available to purchase. And so that's why it jumps into the top 10. So now Fetty Wap has two songs in the top 10 this week, which is pretty awesome. Sort of the summer of Fetty Wap, as I love it.
Yeah. I couldn't be happier about that, by the way.
I mean, you could be.
Just saying.
You could be happier, I suppose, about
physically.
It.
Physically.
I mean, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
it's we've talked about Fetty Wap a ton on this show, but just the fact that, you know, you see this from time to time with, especially in hip hop, where you have these rappers with one monster hit, usually in the summertime. If you look at Bobby Shmurda last year, Trinidad James was kind of the same way with All Gold Everything. And you wonder, can this artist sustain this and find another hit and
got three.
Continue being relevant? Yeah, and now Fetty Wap, like, there's just so much interest, not only in Trap Queen, but in this guy in general. And he's come from, I mean, very, very few people knew who Fetty Wap was at the beginning of 2015. It's July. He has three top 20 hits. He's like the hottest name in hip hop. I mean, you saw yesterday, and I wrote this last week, that he has like multiple Video Music Award nominations, not only in like the artist to watch category, but like best hip hop. Like, I think he's in like best male video category. Like, he's just up there, and people are really regarding him in a way that maybe someone like a Bobby Shmurda, someone like a Trinidad James, they just never got. So it's interesting to me. I think, and to keep rolling with this, I just think that his style is so unique, where you have that kind of sing-song rapping. And we're going to get to another artist who does that, who has the number one album in the country this week. But people are taking that and just enjoying it so much on radio. And yeah, it's very cool. I'm definitely a fan of his stuff, and it's cool to see all of his songs do so, so well so far.
Yeah, that's right. You go, Jason. How's Lee Bryce
you're
doing?
This is just going to be the Pop Shop podcast with just me talking, which is fine.
This is like almost the equivalent of like me being a guest on whatever our hip hop podcast is. I'm like, yep, I'm just here listening.
Well,
no, I mean, it's not like I'm ignorant of Fetty Wap. It's just you're very passionate about Fetty Wap, and I can tell you about some numbers. Unfortunately.
Well, let's talk about some numbers about Fifth Harmony. That the number 5 as in 5H.
From Fetty to
knocking
Fifth.
On the top. Yeah, exactly. From Fetty to Fifth. A Pop Shop podcast retrospective. So Keith, Worth It continues to rise. Number 14 last week, number 12 this week on the Hot 100, reaching a new peak. And what do you think, man? I mean, do you think that this is the time that it's Fifth Harmony's first top 10 coming up?
Well, that'd be lovely if it was. That would be amazing. Worth It goes 14 to 12. Of course, it features Kid Ink. It's actually up 4% in overall chart points. It's not really that too far away from the top 10. It could happen. Of course, we say that every week. Anything can happen. But it's one of those songs that just sort of keeps plugging away. And I would love to see him in the top 10. You know, it would be a wonderful success story for the ladies of Fifth Harmony to have their first top 10 hit on the Hot 100 chart.
Yeah, and it's funny because we talked to them for the 100th episode, and they said that they were kind of surprised that this is the song that crossed over. You saw Boss was the first single from their debut album Reflection, and then Sledgehammer, which is my
should have been an actual huge hit.
Oh my goodness, yeah, seriously, and it entered the top 40. It peaked at number 40, but just to see what Worth It's done. And you know, another song I heard a ton on the radio yesterday, and it's funny because that horn really does sound a lot like Talk Dirty and Problem, and it's just like that horn sound has really resonated with people on top 40.
That's the thing, and we've kind of talked about this offline a bit, not actually on the show, I don't think, but I found that Worth It, to me, it sounds very contemporary with a lot of other songs that you would hear on Top 40 radio right now. It sounds like a lot of other songs, which is probably why it's doing so well. And I think on first blush, you wouldn't know that it was actually a girl group singing it. You might think it's just one girl singing. It's like some girl, some Natalie LaRose, I don't know, whoever, with, some rapper singing. It's, you know, that's sort of a... That's a recipe for success right now is, you know, throw in some horns, say how you're worth it, you know, raise a glass in the air, and then bring in a rapper. I mean, I'm being
like
really stupid about it.
Say how you're worth it.
But I mean, there's a whole swath of songs that sound like that. I just think it's great that they're finally getting some shine and people are paying attention to them now as like legitimate hit makers. I just kind of wish that Sledgehammer was the song that was the one that kind of broke them through. But as they've noted, like they continue to build, like Boss got them fans and then they built it even more with Sledgehammer. And now they've kind of had the breakthrough. And so who knows? Now people will go back and kind of revisit all those other songs and be like, hey, look, there's other songs from this group that I like too, you know?
Yeah, I remember, Keith, a couple months ago, we were talking to someone, and I won't say who, but someone, when we were talking about Fifth Harmony, and this person was like, you know, they're doing everything right, it's just that they can't get that radio hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously the huge social following and the performances, and they just, you know, obviously very likable, but they didn't have that radio hit, and now they it seems like they finally do. So
they do.
Keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Number 12 this week. Also debuting just outside the top 20 this week, another one of our 100th episode guests, 5 Seconds of Summer with She's Kinda Hot, debuts at number 22 on the Hot 100. Now, their biggest hit in terms of chart Hot 100 success to date was Amnesia, which was a top 20 hit, but She's Kinda Hot getting off to a rip-roaring start, Keith.
A sizzling start. It's kind of a hot start. Get it? She's kinda hot. And it's the summertime, and it's 5 Seconds of Summer.
Woo!
Puns!
Fanning myself right
Nothing
now.
Nothing but puns! Sorry.
I'm assuming this was all streams and downloads?
I mean, there was a little bit of airplay, but it's mostly just sort of a big big sales week. Because the song debuts at number 3 on the digital songs chart. It sold 124,000 downloads. That was behind Fetty Wap's debut at number 2 with My Way, the song we talked about a little while ago. And of course, still the top selling song is Omi's Cheerleader. So yeah, it was a big sales week, which is mostly what drove the debut for 5 Seconds of Summer.
Yeah, and you talk about Fifth Harmony and Worth It being sounding like a lot of other contemporary radio hits. She's Kind of Hot is kind of the exact opposite, where it has this good Charlotte pop rock vibe that you don't really hear anywhere else. You kind of hear it with like All Time Low is getting a little bit of pop crossover, but you don't hear it in terms of like the top 40 as much. And you know, they're trying to do their thing with bring back guitars to top 40, and
it's a revolution.
We'll see what happens, man,
for their fans, as they say.
Revolution.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we had a great piece a couple weeks ago on Billboard.com by Maria Sherman, basically saying that, you know, when you have that kind of teen pop bubble burst and you see a band like One Direction winding down, what happens is that young fans typically tend to go toward artists that are a little bit more quote unquote mature. And we talked about this last year with Ed Sheeran kind of taking over that teeny bopper fan base from someone like a Justin Bieber and giving, you know, that kind of pop rock shine and getting those fans. And then you see someone like 5 Seconds of Summer, One Direction is doing their thing. They've been doing it for a while, but I think maybe some of those fans are getting older and getting more into rock music and discovering more rock music, and kind of bridging the gap is 5 Seconds of Summer, who are very good-looking guys, but they play instruments and they have a lot of cred. So it'll be interesting. I think they're going to have a huge, huge, huge second half of this year. Nothing, Keith?
I'm with you. I still feel like I need to kind of like quasi apologize for what I said about Fifth Harmony's Worth It for some reason, because it was like a weird sort of backhanded like compliment. It's like, yeah, it sounds like everything else on the radio. That's why it's a hit. I'm like,
I agree. No, I think it does though. I think that it sounds like a lot of everything else, that the formula is kind of working, and you know, it definitely worked in this case. So I don't think you have anything to. Hey, Fifth Harmony knows that they're friends of the Pop Shop Podcast. You're all good, man. It's all good. It's all gravy. We talked about the top 10. We talked about the top 20 and what is just outside of the top 20. But let's talk about a couple songs that are either in the lower reaches of the Hot 100 or could be there soon. That's why we call this segment Soon to Be Hits. All right, man. Do you want to start? Do you want
sure,
me to start?
I can start. So my soon-to-be-hit is Halsey's New Americana. It debuts at number 34 on our alternative songs chart. It's not on the Hot 100 yet, but who knows? It could be in the next, you know, couple weeks or something. The song, I think, it's like a year old. It's from, 2014, but it's now getting a push now, I think, as the first proper single from her upcoming album, Badlands, which is coming out August 28th. The song name checks a lot of sort of pop culture moments, brands, figures, people, James Dean, Biggie, Nirvana. But it's cool and it's an interesting song. Definitely Halsey is one to watch. Her EP, which is called Room 93, has sold about 35,000. The track that you might know already, and you may not know that it's Halsey, is called Ghost. It has done like 5 million views globally on YouTube, all the versions of it, official versions, that is, combined. So she's off to a good start. And I think she even toured with Imagine Dragons, might be on tour with Imagine Dragons right now, too. So someone to watch for, New Americana by Halsey. That is my soon-to-be-hit this week.
Yeah, and just to follow up, Halsey is an artist that, like you said, has been opening for Imagine Dragons and along with Metric. And her fan base, Keith, I don't know if you know, but she's one of those artists with just an unbelievably rabid fan base online. And you basically anything you say about Halsey just gets a ton of just eyeballs, because there's so much dedication there. And for a young artist, for a new artist, that's like the thing you really, really want is just to have that kind of passion. And we'll see. Late, like you said, album's coming out in a couple weeks, so we'll see if it translates into sales. Keith, my soon-to-be hit is actually from a very familiar figure to the Hot 100, Calvin Harris, and his collaboration with the Disciples called How Deep Is Your Love. It's the name of a Rapture album, by the way.
Not to be confused with the Bee Gees song either. It's not a cover.
Yeah, exactly.
And not to be confused with Drew Hill either.
Yeah, wow. A lot of How Deep Is Your Love.
A lot of
How anyway, Deep Is Your Love and Me.
Sorry.
Tell me what it's going to be. That debuts at number 60 on the Hot 100. Now, this is a song that is not featured on Calvin Harris's 2014 album, Motion. He's already had hits like Summer and Blame and Pray to God from that album. This is a song that is sent out as a single. He said that he wanted basically to crash the summer of 2015. He wanted to have a new song out there for his fans. And it's a great house song. Man, I'm can't speak again. House song, come on. And you know, Calvin Harris is someone that you can never really underestimate on the Hot 100. He's had huge smash hits as both the featured artist and as the main artist. And I think that I don't know, this might be arriving a little bit late in the summer period to make a dent in terms of like our Songs of the Summer chart.
Probably, yeah.
But I think that this is a song that could spill over into the fall. And like I said, Calvin Harris
is great for every season. No, he's not just a summer guy.
Absolutely.
He's a man for all seasons, all the year through.
What's funny is that his last two albums both came out in the fall. Motion last November, I believe, and then 18 months before that. So, Keith, that is Calvin Harris and Halsey on this week's Soon to Be Hits. Man, we actually have to get to Years and Years in a couple minutes, but before that, we did not talk about the Nicki Minaj Taylor Swift Twitter showdown of last week. We did not talk about it last week because it was our 100th episode spectacular. We did not talk about any really pop news, but kind of resolved, but any kind of lingering feelings over that, Keith? We didn't really talk about that that much between us offline.
No.
What do you think of everything?
Any kind of
takeaways?
So what we're talking about here is the MTV Video Music Award nominations came out last week. Taylor Swift was nominated for Bad Blood for Video of the Year, as well as a number of other videos. Nicki Minaj, her Anaconda video, was nominated for two VMAs, but none of those nominations were for Video of the Year. Nicki Minaj felt that her song was her video was overlooked, especially considering that it was a record-breaking video and it broke the one-day Vivo record, I believe. And she felt that the video was being possibly overlooked because of her image, or perhaps because she wasn't a slender white girl, I think possibly referencing, you know, maybe folks like Miley Cyrus, you know, and Katy Perry. She didn't name anyone specifically. And so she was vocalizing a lot of this on Twitter. I'm just recapping because in case, you know, you're listening, you have no idea what we're talking about. And Taylor specifically picked up on the slender white girl tweet and tweeted at Nicki, thinking that the tweet was referencing Taylor, because Taylor is a slender white girl and she's up for Video of the Year, and Nicki was not. And if you just isolated that one tweet, I can sort of see how you might think it's about you. But if you took all of Nicki's tweets in context, you know, and strung them together, you would see that it was sort of a larger picture she was trying to talk about. Ultimately, everything worked out. There was a moment where Nicki and Taylor were sort of like on the outs, but then Taylor apologized and everything is good now. That's the explanation.
It's funny because the only thing I really want to add that I didn't write about this. I didn't really want to write about this just because I thought that it wasn't really my place to insert myself into a misunderstanding. And there were a lot of think pieces and hot takes about this. And I'm sort of glad I wasn't in on that. The one thing I will say is that in terms of Nicki Minaj, this was a huge look for her because she is an artist that more and more and more people are not only viewing as a hip-hop star or a pseudo-pop star, but a superstar, like a headliner, a capital P pop star. And to have this kind of exchange with Taylor Swift where she kind of showed Taylor Swift, like, no, listen, I have an important point to make. And she made that point, and that point really really resonated with a lot of people. And people started to say, hey, like, are these VMA nominations just, it's not even, obviously not about the VMA nominations, but the larger point she was trying to make. And to have Taylor Swift kind of double back on herself and say, I was wrong, I apologize, is a big win for Nicki. And you know, the other thing I want to say is just that a lot of people, I think a surprising number of people, kind of tore Taylor Swift to shreds based on a couple tweets. And, you know, I get it. I think that when she said, like, oh, you're in, if I win, you can come up on stage with me. I get it. She wasn't trying to be condescending, but it came off as a little condescending. But you know what? I also kind of applaud her for doubling back a couple days later and admitting she was wrong and not doing this whole dance of like, well, that's not what I meant. That, she's like, no, I was wrong. I'm sorry. And I misconstrued what you were saying. It's a very adult thing to do. And for everyone who kind of lambasted her for, you know, a couple tweets, I think that it was, she should be applauded for admitting she was wrong. I mean, I know a lot of people in general, much less pop stars, rarely admit when they make mistakes. So I recognize that. I think this kind of was as weird as it was for them to be like fighting on Twitter, I kind of see it as a win-win for both. Yeah, last thing I want to say about this is that sometimes I feel like you got to text somebody instead of tweet at them.
Yes.
You know, when there's like a misunderstanding.
Don't tweet. Like, don't.
Like, if you tweeted, like, oh, man, like certain pop editors are really getting on my nerves. Like, I wouldn't tweet at you being like, what? I've always loved you and supported you, Keith. What's going on? I would text you. Like, whoa, is this like a subtweet at me? What's going on? But yeah, sometimes you just got to do that. Thank goodness you've never sent a tweet like that, man. I'd be alarmed. Anyway,
I'll do that right now and let's see what happens. We could always trim this. We could always trim this VMA chat bad. I feel like we went on way too long.
No, it's all right, man. We got to get to Years and Years. So again, Years and Years, great new act. Their debut album Communion came out in the U.S. early July, and one of my favorite albums of the year, truly one of my favorite albums of the year. The guys talked about the making of the album, touring behind it, US versus UK, and what's next for them. So here is Years and Years on the Pop Shop Podcast. It's
you
that I've been
waiting to find. You know, I think every time it always feels really exciting when you come to New York, because
yeah,
it just feels like such a great place for music. And we've done a few we've only really done two shows here, but they've both been really amazing, the crowds. So it feels really nice to be back here. But it's just so big, America. I just can't get my head around how big it is. Because yeah, I feel like, you know, we're quite busy in Europe all the time, but America is like just the whole of Europe.
It's just a whole different, you know, ball of wax.
Like in one place.
Yeah.
Bigger
than Europe.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different countries, like, you know, so.
I was at one of those New York shows a couple months ago. And
which one?
The one at Le Poisson Rouge, yeah. And Katy Perry was there.
Yeah, she was there, yeah.
So that,
she's
that
a super fan.
She is a super fan. So that must have been a cool moment for her to be like, oh, yeah, I'm here to see you guys. She's like, what was that like?
That was just great. I mean, she came backstage to say hi to us, and she was in a beanie and... We almost didn't recognize her. Yeah, she was like sort of incognito. But she was with lots of friends, and she was really nice.
She had cool friends. She had good friends. I was impressed by her cool friends.
No one told me that she was... Always judge a person by their friends.
Yeah,
so.
you got to. No one told me she was coming, which
yeah,
is
you were a little bit ill.
Surprised. I was really ill.
Would that have affected the show? Be like, by the way, Katy Perry's in the
audience? I think it would have
made
me feel maybe slightly on edge. I don't know, because it's so small as well, the Poisson Rouge. I didn't want to like be looking for Katy Perry's face.
Carly Rae, I just remember Carly Rae Jepsen was at that show too.
She was
you guys
too.
Are like bringing in all the pop superstars.
Yes. We should form a super group.
Yeah. Super group of super friends. So
yeah.
One of the things I love about this album is that it's so hard to classify. Like I listened to one song and it's like, oh, this is a dance album. I listened to one song and it's like, oh, it's an R&B album. How do you guys think about your music in terms of genre, in terms of influence? Because I'm really curious in this.
It's much easier to classify it the other way. So it's not death metal.
Not blues.
So
it's not rock.
That's really easy to do it that
I
way.
I could have sworn there were a couple death metal songs.
No,
I don't know.
It's album three.
It's not jazz
we're
fusion.
In a legal wrangle with Polydor and we'd want to piss them off. No, I think that it's...
You just find it in the popular section in the CD shop. next to yeah. Yay say.
It's your Y music. That's what.
Yeah, Yusin Nadur.
Y genre.
Y genre.
I guess we just kind of come from. We just make everything electronic, mostly electronic music. So we're kind of like a normal, you know, like any other band would make their music in a live scenario. Like we used to do that, and then we just translated it all into laptops and synths. So I think just means the result. A lot of the stuff kind of can slip between genres really easily, but that's always been important to us, you know, to make music that would be able to be played on the radio, but also, you know.
Yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act because we definitely were aware that we wanted to have our own sound, which I think we do, but we also wanted to have fun and not be constricted by, you know, whatever we did before and having to do the same thing, because the way we listen to music is kind of the way people listen to music now as well, which is that they don't necessarily care too much about genres. It's not as tribal anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we wanted to make the album a body of work that sort of every song sort of feels right next to each other.
Yeah.
So we discarded a lot of stuff that didn't sound right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Who are some of the electronic artists and groups that have influenced you guys just growing up and kind of soaking in their stuff to think about refracting it out as years and years?
Mm-hmm. There's endless.
Yeah, I think we sometimes talk about those sort of earlier kind of synth bands like Depeche Mode and Pet Shop Boys are a big one, and A-ha and Eurythmics. And then I think more recently we really love Little Dragon made make their music sound so kind of accessible but also unique and quirky and electronic. And Emery's really into Caribou. We all like Caribou.
And lots of, I don't know, like non-band music as well, pop music from like the noughties and 90s and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, R&B.
But for me, it's just the songwriting's always been like number one. So I just, you know, I'm like obsessed with writing the perfect song. So, you know, I can really appreciate anything if I think it's a good song, you know, whether it's Rihanna or, you know, Neutral Milk Hotel. I just want to hear a good song.
That would be an interesting mashup.
Yeah.
I like
it. Yeah. I don't want to try.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure these songs have been kind of ready to go for a while. Are you already thinking about the next iteration of Years and Years?
No.
No. You're like, all right, this is out. All right, let's do these songs for a while.
We'll sit on it for a while.
Yeah.
I've started to think a little bit about what the next, because I it was important. I just at one point I was writing a song a day, and I was like, these songs are rubbish. These aren't good. I think it was good. You know, it's good to take a break too creatively. But I have started to think about what the next record will sound like, or just, you know, a few
it's
melodies.
Be like K-pop.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's gonna have a lot of Korean influence.
Yeah, it's not gonna be us. It's gonna be a revolving set of band members.
You guys are the new Menudo.
The guy with the glasses. It's gonna be one with the glasses. One with a beard.
That'd be great. That'd be very meta. And then we'll make a film about it.
A little while.
Yeah.
Wow. No, that's enticing. I like that. Thanks, man. What was the last song to make the cut for this album? Or not, maybe either the last song that you worked on, or the last song that you were like, all right, this is going to make it?
Gold. Gold.
Really?
Literally came in the last 2 days.
One. 2 days.
That might be my favorite song on the album. That's interesting.
Really?
It's a really good one. A few people have said that. I think sometimes it's that thing about once all the work's been done, you kind of give yourself a little bit of breathing space, and then you feel it just opens up a little bit, something extra, and you pull something good out. Which, thank God, really, because it could have just been a really rubbish song that was track 10.
For a while I was intent on calling it track 10.
Really?
Yeah,
because we didn't have one. We were like, oh, we didn't know what we were going to do for track 10, and then
well, there you go. I mean, you guys are, we touched upon it a little at the start of this, but in terms of Europe and UK by extension and the US, like, how different does it feel in terms of just everything, in terms of promotion, in terms of playing shows? Like, what is the single biggest difference?
It is different. The Ollie touched on the scale of the place. I think with the US, the scale of it is hard to explain to Americans how different it is to Europe. Like, but also I think in terms of people. I think people are quite a bit more enthusiastic in the US.
Yeah.
They're a bit more open with their feet. You know, they wear their heart on their sleeve a little more. Europeans can be a bit more cool, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I'm having fun. Yeah. They won't show
it. They won't show it.
But I really like that about the US, I think. Yeah, the people are cool. Mm. What about you, Ollie?
I guess the biggest difference just feels like the scale. I mean, I just don't know how, you know, because in the UK, you have like one radio station, you know, a couple major radio stations that you need to have play your music. But here there's like, you know, a few major radio stations every state at least. I don't know. So it just feels, it feels different in that way.
Well, it must have been at least a little bit daunting for you guys.
I was going to say, it's a little bit scary.
Just because, you guys, I remember when the first singles came out and just hearing like, oh, Sound of 2015 and like, oh, this is the next big thing to blow. And it was usually a lot of like BBC in the UK. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you guys process that sort of information? Obviously, it's a great thing to have, you know, the backing of radio and tastemakers. But how did you guys process that?
I don't think I process any of it.
We ignored it.
Ignored it. You're just like, all right.
It's just something that's happening.
It's kind of feels difficult to wrap your head around, really. It's overwhelming. But you just have to recognize the kind of platform that it provides, that gives you, and do your best to make the most of it.
Very cool. Thanks again to Years and Years. And again, check out Communion. It is in stores now. It is very, very good. Keith, you're a Years and Years fan, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm not like super fan, but I've enjoyed their music.
Yeah, you got it. I feel like you'd really, really like this album if you haven't heard the whole thing. And because we've talked about King a bunch, and I think it might have been on Soon to Be Hits, but it was definitely on the Must Hear Music podcast. One of my favorite songs of the year, and those guys are great. Keith, are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah!
Chart stat of the week.
Do, 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 do. Hey, beep, beep. Donna Summer reference. So this week's chart stat of the week, hey, you're welcome, is actually about NSYNC. 15, one of your favorites. 15 years ago this week on the Hot 100 dated July 29th, 2000, NSYNC got its one and only number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 with It's Gonna Be Me. Spent 2 weeks. I can't beatbox. I mean, I can, but that was a very bad example of it. Anyway, It's Gonna Be Me spent 2 weeks at number one. Most people might be surprised that NSYNC has only had one number one single on the Hot 100 chart. Let me explain why. NSYNC came up at a time, in a weird, strange time on the Hot 100 chart, where it was a time of transition on the Hot 100, where record labels did not put out singles anymore, like commercially available singles to go purchase in the store. And this was also a time pre-iTunes, pre-digital services. So the only way to buy anything a lot of the time, like, was to buy a full album. And so singles kind of died off in the late 90s. And so many of NSYNC's big hits were never actually available to purchase as like standalone singles in the store. So therefore, on the Hot 100 chart, which blends sales, airplay, back then just sales and airplay, their songs would just chart off of just airplay. So they never had a number one until It's Gonna Be Me, when they put out a commercially available single and it shot to number one. Certainly a song like Bye Bye Bye, which was number one for 5 weeks on our radio songs chart, that certainly would have been a number one hit on the Hot 100.
Yeah.
But it went to number four because it didn't have any sales behind it. So if you're wondering how in the world did NSYNC, one of the biggest boy bands ever, only have one number one on the Hot 100, well, you can blame their label, but also blame just sort of the way the record industry worked at the time, and there you go. So 15 years ago this week, NSYNC got its first and only number one hit so far on the Hot 100 with It's Gonna Be Me.
Thank you, Keith, for your chart stat of the week. Keith, do you have a favorite NSYNC single?
Probably the obvious, Bye Bye Bye.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think pop. Pop is still my favorite.
Do you ever wonder why this music gets
that
you
song,
high?
That song
takes
is
you
like
on a ride. Feel it when your body starts to rock. Sorry.
I just love the concept of that song, which is just like grown men defending themselves for singing pop music. It's just like
why you want to like drop out of class of five. Type of thing. Yeah, it was so defensive. It was just like, no, man, we're doing pop, and pop's awesome. Yeah, come on, step off, Eminem. Stop trying to like beat us up. And you know, pop. Mm. I'm like, wow.
I know.
Right.
It's just so funny. It's just like, I love it. I love it so much.
BT. Sorry, I was like so excited when that song. So a lot of the album, I think a lot of that album was done with BT, the producer BT. Who I really liked a lot of his stuff that came out before that. So I just and then remember when they did it on the VMAs with Michael Jackson showing up out of the Etch-a-Sketch. Come
oh
on.
My goodness!
Anyway, sorry.
That's amazing. Anyway, Keith, thank you as always for a tremendous Pop Shop podcast. Thank you guys all for listening. We are going out on Bye Bye Bye. We will see you guys next week. Thanks again and take care. So I'm